My name is Glenn O'Jard from News of the North, and I'd like to welcome you to another internet-only deep dive. This time, we dive into the Capitol with an interview from Senator Tom Begich. We discuss the budget, education, his legacy, and eventually, Sun Tzu's The Art of War. I think you're really going to get a lot of value out of this. And remember, if you know somebody who might get value out of this too, give us a share. But let's get into it. One of the things that I like to ask folks right off the bat is a little bit about their origin story and who they are, where they came from. And Senator Begich said that he was
really sort of born into it in one way. My parents were both teachers. My dad ended up serving the state Senate, first ran in 1960, the year I was born, and then was elected in 62 for the first time, served two terms in the state Senate, this very building, and then went on to serve in the United States Congress. He passed away in 1972 while campaigning for re-election on his way here to Juneau. And then as a consequence of that involvement, of course, we, as a young person, you're around politics all the time. My background, my degree is in history. I'm a musician professionally and a facilitator professionally, but problems have to be solved. And come my 56th year, I felt it was important for me to get engaged and involved and see if I couldn't help solve our budget problems. So that's how I got to this position. I ran for the seat that was formerly held by Senator Johnny Ellis. He was retiring. I filed a spirited primary race, which I won, and came on to serve here.
What goals are you hoping to achieve while you're in session this year?
Just as with last year, the primary goal is to see if we can actually craft a real fiscal plan. That means a plan that includes revenue in the form of a wealth or income tax. I believe in that. It means ensuring we have some form of use of the earnings of the permanent fund so that we're taking advantage of our largest renewable resource in the state of Alaska, which is capital. Permanent fund produces more money than any other source of wealth in the state of Alaska now. And because of that, it really is our future. And so how we defend that makes a big difference. I think that that fiscal plan also needs to find a way to constitutionalize the dividend check so that we're all invested in this future together and we don't have a fear that our investment will be taken away from us. And then finally, that plan at some point needs to also include some form of additional contribution from the oil industry. So that's, the fiscal plan is my primary goal. That's my description of it. The second thing I think we need to be sure we do is protect our education program and our education system in the state of Alaska. It's a constitutional obligation. It's one of our most explicit obligations. And that means not only ensuring our K-12 education system is preserved, but that we also preserve our University of Alaska because it is a beacon to our young people. It keeps them in the state and it attracts others to our state. It also is a tremendous research engine, which helps drive innovation and technology in the state of Alaska. So number one, a fiscal plan. Number two, ensuring we have a strong education program. And then I would say probably just making sure that we maintain a quality of life in the state of Alaska that ensures that we all have a desire to stay here, that we can be, of which we can be proud, and one that attracts others to our state.
When you talk about a wealth or an income tax, what income level would that be affecting?
Well, there are a number of different versions out there, and the problem with being in the minority is you don't get to dictate what they are in the end. However, I would hope that the final plan that is developed would exempt our lowest income residents, would be progressive, meaning that it starts at a lower rate with lower levels of income and increases in its rate as it goes up. I wouldn't want it to be so onerous that it would drive people out of the state of Alaska. But we all believe, those of us who've lived here, I would say either most or all of our lives, believe that we've had a good break and it's time we gave a little bit back. So I would say probably something that would generate between, for me personally, between $200 and $400 million is what I would hope we could do. I think that in the end, we'll probably settle on something closer to $100-$200 million for the state. Regardless, it's important for us to have some kind of revenue coming into the state of Alaska because, one of the keys to our ability as a state to function is what's called our bonding ability. And so we've had that bonding rating, which basically determines how much money costs to borrow. We've had it, our bond rating fall. And that simply can't continue because that means the cost of borrowing money for the state goes up, which means we're in a difficult, difficult situation when it comes to repairing structures, paying back our pension debts that we have, and other kinds of issues for the state, cities, and other communities. So when the cost of money goes up, we go down, if you will. So with that in mind, having some level of an income tax, some level of a wealth tax that captures, say, at least $100 to $200 million would at least send a signal to the bond agencies that we're serious about our future, that we do believe in a sustainable plan that has a lot of different areas we rely on instead of just oil and gas. And that's really how you get to the future here in the state of Alaska.
In particular with this education bill, what priorities do you have as far as spending and perhaps even cuts?
Well, when it comes to education, there's two bills I think you might be referring to. One is Senator Stevens' bill. The other is Representative Seaton's bill that would seek early funding of education. These bills basically hold education funding harmless. That's the same level as it was last year under these bills. All they do is change the time for when we do this. What it essentially does is it removes education from the table so that it's no longer a negotiated, fought-over thing. It's our most critical piece of this budget. So what we do is we resolve it early, send certainty to our school districts, give them a better opportunity to recruit teachers because they can be in those recruitment pools earlier. They have access to the teachers both in-state and out-of-state that are the best and the brightest. Right now, we can't do that because we don't even know how much money we're going to have. And so a school district can't make a promise to a potential teacher until they actually know what their budget is. So these bills would have that decision made by April 1st. So a district would know with some certainty what their level of funding was going to be going into that year. That way, they wouldn't be pink-slipping people, they wouldn't be suffering from teacher turnover, and they would have the ability to recruit better teachers beyond the ones that they already have. Today, President Johnson from the university identified that we have roughly $20 million in expenses for recruitment every year. Over 50% of our rural teachers turn over. It's 15%, 15% statewide, 50% in our rural communities where we have the most difficulty in providing a consistent education. And that's one of the reasons why. Early funding would help alleviate those numbers to some degree.
Do you see any opposition to early funding at this point?
Well, I watched the debate on the House floor partially today, and there was considerable disagreement from the House minority, and I'm not sure why. I think this is one of the things we said in the press conference earlier today. This is something that ought to be a no-brainer. You simply have an obligation to educate your children, and you can't play footsie with that. You really honestly have to do the job. And the way you do the job is you fund it earlier and you fund it at the levels that it needs to be funded at to ensure that you have a quality education. When cuts were proposed last year, the resulting compromise was no cuts to education and, in fact, a slight increase to pre-kindergarten, which is critically important. Without pre-kindergarten, kids don't even come ready and prepared to learn at kindergarten. So together we have to do all of these things. The opposition seems to be based more on politics than on policy. It's another reason why you ought to support early funding, because you got to take politics out of education. It's no place for it.
So how can the public help you in your efforts?
Well, I would say that the public can help, not me so much as the state of Alaska, by getting behind both of these early education bills. You know, Gary Stevens is from Kodiak, a Republican from Kodiak in the Senate majority. Paul Seaton is a Republican from Homer in the House majority. That House majority is made up of Republicans, Democrats, and Independents. Together, they have crafted what are really bipartisan bills. I would ask every citizen of the state of Alaska, if they care about education, to chime in. Let their House members and their Senate members know that they support these early funding bills because it's the right answer to how to address education in the state of Alaska. Certainly, it will do more to stabilize our workforce than any single thing I can imagine at this point.
And then my last question is, if you could choose how people remembered you, what would you want your legacy to be?
Well, there's a question. Well, that's a fair question. That's a good question. If I were to wanted to have a legacy, it would be to have been the author of Alaska's Universal Voluntary Pre-K program, which I am and have supported and have introduced. And it would be because I helped revolutionize the way we look at energy in the state of Alaska. These are the two things that matter to me. But really, if I'm going to be successful in this job, I hope no one remembers who I was and that they just see the work that other people did that carries on the things I believe in, because that's what really matters in the end. It's not what thing has your name on it. It's what actually changed. So that's what I believe in. And that's what I hope the legacy I would have would be, is that people remember that he was an agent of change.
Oh, actually, there is one question I want to ask you. Right now, Sun Tzu's Art of War is on Mr. Begich's desk. And I am really curious because it's right there. This has to be important to you, is it? And why?
Oh, I read Sun Tzu when I was young, and I've always valued the wisdom of the Art of War. People think it's a violent book, but it's absolutely nothing to do with violence. It's all about knowing proper respect and proper behavior. This version in particular is quite interesting. What it teaches me is patience and thoughtfulness and approach. You can be a member of a 5-member minority in a 20-member body and get a heck of a lot done. And part of my legacy question that you asked earlier comes right back to the art of war. You don't want to be remembered as being the general who won or lost the war. You just want to make sure the war gets won. And in my perspective, and where Sun Tzu has helped me, is just guiding me down that path, knowing when a battle is worth fighting, when one isn't, and knowing that in the end, you're never sure who your allies are going to be, so you have to really work with everybody.
I'd like to thank Mr. Begich for his time and thought, and I'd like to thank you too for coming along on this internet-only deep dive. And remember, the only way that we stay afloat is if people are listening. So if you know somebody who might find this interesting or entertaining or educational, please give us a share and come back and see me again at KINYradio.com or streaming at the Juno Radio Center app. Thanks again.